Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So very exciting, the conversation that we have in front of us, you know, very inspiring to, you know, a founder that has done it a couple of times, you know, and very successfully so with a really good exit, you know, with a company that he almost bootstrapped. You know, they raised almost like no money and then they had an incredible, you know, exit, especially being in a place like Poland, you know, very remarkable. So again, the building, the scaling, the financing, early experiences before building a product company, raising money and getting no's left and right. Also thinking about succession and removing yourself so that you can build on the business versus building in the business. And then also what he's focusing right now, it sounds like transitioning to the investor role. But without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Maciej Sawatzynski. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So originally born in Poland, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up in Poland?
It was good. I was born at the end of the socialist time in Poland. So I experienced in my youth the big transition from socialism to capitalism in Poland. And basically all the time, very high growth. So things have changed a lot, even in my childhood. I was born in Katowice, which is a more like industrial town. Now it transitions more to technology, but it was used to known for coal mines and heavy industry, etc. Back in the days when I was young, and I moved to Wrocław to study computer science, but I didn't manage to actually finish my studies because I started my first startup, which was when advertising network. It was actually the first block advertising network in Poland back in the days when they said that, like, if you pay bloggers, they will lose their independence and you will actually hurt the industry and the people who wants to publish for the sake of, like, you know, telling the truth. But it wasn't the case. It wasn't hugely successful startup, but I learned a ton of things that actually helped me to build the successful companies that I did afterwards.
So then let's talk about getting into computers. What got you into computers?
Yeah, so I was self-taught, and I was actually self-taught software developer as well. Also, this was when I was in high school. So actually I started with, like, installing my first Linux when I was, I think, 13 years old or so. And then I, like, you know, wanted to learn how, understand how it works and, like, you know, why it's so complicated and so on. And one thing led to another to me being like 14 year or 15 year old and buying books about, like, programming and learning to program. So I learned, like, you know, from low level how the operating system works, then learned programming, and it was always my passion. That's why I went to studies. But then it turned out that building actually the business is as maybe even more exciting than actually, like, just programming.
So obviously, yeah, I mean, you went and studied computer science, but you dropped out. So let's talk about that. You know, like, what was that process of, you know, you dropping out and getting started with that advertising network that ended up not having the outcome that you had hoped for?
So I was always involved in too many things in that days. So I couldn't focus just on the studies. I was, like, organizing computer science courses, conferences with some friends and so on. And it was actually, I think a friend of mine called me with the idea and said, like, perhaps maybe we do that. And we developed the idea. It wasn't like advertising network in the first, let's say, iteration, but we developed the idea over, like, multiple meetings and calls because we weren't, like, he was from the city that I was born in, Katowice, but I was already living in Wrocław where I studied. And we actually started coding it. I was coding, he was doing some graphic design and marketing, and we launched it after the summer break. And then it started like, you know, we started having clients, we started fundraising and so on. So it was so much time that I dedicated to that I forgot even to go to the university and continue that. And actually, there was just theory there. And in the computer science, at least in Poland, in these like first year courses, you have in second year, you have a lot of theory. And I was like interested very much in the practice. So that was something that was naturally I was driven to, and I dedicated my entire time to that.
So then for this, you know, like what happened with the company? Because as the saying goes, you either succeed or you learn. In this case, it sounds like there was a massive lesson for you.
So we got some traction. We got really nice like campaigns for like consumer brands, from like, you know, some smartphones to some like other consumer products and blogs that we run. We had like probably a couple hundred blogs in the network. So it was good. We were like 15. I think in the peak, we were almost 20 people in the company. We had an investor, which was one of the big portals in Poland. But it was time where the investor came and they took the majority package if they wanted to invest. So pretty much after 2 years of running that, we hit some like the company wasn't growing anymore. We didn't have any idea on how to like, you know, develop it further. We wanted to like get more capital to experiment with some additional channels and technology build out. We basically didn't get along with our majority shareholder, which was this portal, and we left the company. Like, it wasn't like that we just said that we will no longer do it and leave, but they basically bought our shares from us at a like more or less nominal, but we got some money to support ourselves for and start the next business, but it wasn't like an exit really. And we transitioned that to the team that was in this portal, and they ran it for like, I don't know, 2-3 years, and they basically incorporated it into their structure. So it wasn't existing. After two or three years, the company was no longer existing as a separate entity.
So what happened next?
So next, I founded a software development company called ClearCode, because we had this experience with building advertising technology for this network. So I said, okay, let's do it for others for money, because we have some expertise. And this actually worked. That was a good decision. And we started, like we acquired some customers. We grew the team. This company is actually like quite nice exit that we did after a decade of it. But what happened was interesting, that in ClearCode, we incubated several other ideas that we had, including Qwik Pro, which we will talk about, which is probably the most successful. I mean, this is the most successful company that I've built so far, but also others where we like Canary Nest, an advertising platform, which we sold just the technology. We didn't even get to the traction, but we had a client that was looking just for that. So we sold them the technology. We had a couple failed ideas as well, but what it showed is that we cannot just do work for hire as a software developers and a company that specializes for developing technology for others. We're always driven to build some products on our own, or at least I was very driven to do that. And that led to Qwik Pro, which actually initially was an open source project, which I joined back in the days when I was like a part of this advertising network. But over the years, we've built a proprietary version of that and built the whole company around it.
So then talk to us, because I mean, it ended up being your biggest success to date, you know, Qwik. So what ended up being the business model of Qwik? How are you guys making money?
So it's a pretty much SaaS license fees for using the product based on the usage, so the amount of data that you are processing with Qwik Pro. The platform is like, it's a privacy-friendly alternative to Google Analytics. It has some extra capabilities that may not be found in other analytics platforms, but basically over the years it became a choice for enterprises, especially data sensitive industries, but nowadays pretty much any other industry as well, to replace Adobe Analytics or Google Analytics, which are two other leaders in the space.
So obviously, you know, like this was really venturing into the product-based type of sphere, you know, very, very different from like the service-based, you know, whether it was the advertising network or the software development, you know, services that you were providing. What was that transition like?
So it was at first difficult because as a company that was always like service-based, especially with ClearCode, where we had majority of the company was developers because you are basically selling development hours. And what we, the early mistake that we did is we thought that, okay, the company should be mainly driven by IT and R&D in the product, not the business side. So we had probably like 70% of people technical doing product and only 30% doing everything else, marketing, sales, etc., which was an early mistake because we should at least have an equal effort on that, even if not more at some point. But, you know, we had technology background, we knew technology, it helped us to create great product, but it caused us to have some years before we hit really traction where our growth like got to this like 70% or 60% year over year, etc. So in the early days, we didn't have that much growth, but we could afford it because we had the software development company where we were making profit and basically we were eating up this profit to build the product and the technology for PeeWee Pro, which gave us a lot of buffer and we could bootstrap for years. We raised on like $2 million of the outside investment, and we did it only after we had already $1 million of annual recurring revenue. So till then, we were basically spending our own money and time on bootstrapping it.
So then in this case, I know that too with PeeWee, you guys raised some money. I mean, you ended up raising about $2 million or so. But I know that the raising money was not easy. You know, there was a lot of rejection.
Yeah, so that the rejection was mainly driven by that software, that the services side of the business. So we basically had a ClearCode, which is a software development company, and a subsidiary, which was the product company called PeeWee Pro. And there was a lot of rejection from the VC funds because they wanted only invest in product. And we said, okay, you can invest into the product, but then the discussion was, okay, but you cannot work and have your software development company on the side because we want you to focus 100% on the product. And that was difficult because this company was already like making profit, had like 70 engineers on board or so. So it wasn't like, okay, we will close it and basically write it to zero because it was too valuable for us. And on the other side, this was too much to move to the product business. We couldn't absorb at PeeWee Pro like 70 people, being like at that time, probably like 20 or 15 to 20 people of staff. So it was difficult from that standpoint. We ultimately found a venture, like not a classical venture capital fund, but like an evergreen fund that invests their own money without like even investment term. And they actually found, what's interesting, they found an advantage in that they will invest in the holding with two companies, and basically the services business will be the hedge if the product fails. And what happened at the very end, which is just, it confirmed exactly what their thesis was. We sold the services business ClearCode exactly, like almost exactly for the valuation where they were coming into the company. So basically they returned the capital. We returned the capital from the sale of the services business, and the product business, which was much more valuable, several times more, was just the profit, pure profit from the investment.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
I mean, you guys grew it to 12 million in ARR, which is really spectacular, you know, given the amount of money that you guys had raised. I mean, it could be even viewed as a bootstrapping, because obviously, you know, like to the kind of exit that you guys got, you know, which was reported for over 50 million euros, you know, is really spectacular. So I think that, you know, for this, you know, one thing that is interesting too is, and you did this not only with Peewee, but then also with Canary, which was another, you know, business that you incubated under, you know, Clearco. I guess the what did you learn around to building a team around you so that you could remove yourself and really have that succession going, but more importantly, allowing yourself for being able to build not in the business and be under the weeds, but more on top of the business, you know, where you're able to push strategy.
Yeah, so that was particularly difficult for me because I'm very hands-on. So I was always very close to the product and very close to the sales and developing the income. I was never the... I even had a lot of problems in the beginning with delegation. So I was always like, okay, I will do it. I will do it faster, better, etc. So with that like mindset, and over the years, of course, I learned delegation and learning, like in the peak, we had more than 200 people because it was services part and Peewee product was I was running at the same time. But it was hard to remove myself from the business. I started by just, it was done mainly with internal promotions of the people who were almost from the very beginning in the company, and they proved themselves in several roles over the years. And we basically were increasing the C-level suite in each of the company, and then removing myself as a CEO to more a supervisory role. But it took, like, you know, in each case, in Clearcode and in Peewee, it took almost 2 years, this whole process. But on the other end, I had the feeling that the team is delivering more, the team is, like, taking over my responsibilities, and it was done gradually. And I had this, like, feel, okay, that I'm still a bit in the control over the process. And when I felt that they are actually doing a better job than I am, then I was, okay, I let it go. The funny story of that is that when we were spinning off the two companies, actually when I totally removed myself from Clearcode because we were preparing it for the sale, the management team was already in place. The moment I focused only on Peewee Pro and did nothing more at Clearcode, not only Peewee Pro started doing better, but also Clearcode started doing better. So it showed that, like, you know, keeping the focus of the team was super, super, super important. And it drove the results in both of the businesses.
So what was like going through the acquisition of Peewee? Because, I mean, that acquisition was incredible outcome. So what was that like? Make us insiders in here.
Yeah, so that was like actually very long process because we had two failed transactions. So one failed transaction was early in 2022 when the war broke out in Ukraine. So we had foreign private equity funds with offer. Actually, that was a peak of valuation. So we had an offer that was almost like as good or better than the one that we sold the company for almost 2 years later with company almost twice as big. So it shows like what was the disconnect between the valuations today and at the peak of the end of 2021, more or less. But we basically were, after the due diligence, no red flags, some things to solve, but nothing that would derail the transaction. And we learned that, because of the economic environment and geopolitical environment, this fund is basically putting on hold all the transactions in Central Europe. So that we were devastated a bit by that. And we regrouped and we thought, we will start the organized process, because that offer we got from the network and from the market. So we it was good. That's why we were processing it, but we didn't have the process. After it failed, into the end of 2022, we started the process, and it was probably the worst timing to start pitching to private equity funds, because we had all the good metrics and we had not too much interest. There was interest, but nothing was progressing till term sheet that we would accept, because that's the other thing. So it took us several months to get to the offer that was acceptable for shareholders and me. And we started the due diligence early 2023, and it went well. Again, we negotiated the SPA, and we were already setting up meeting at the notary and the investment committee of this fund. They said that this would be just formality, but actually the investment committee at the last finish line said, we will not do the transaction for no apparent reason. We never got to the real reason. So that was another time where we had another private equity fund that pulled out from the transaction. And then the third transaction was actually we had two competing offers that were very good, and we chose the one that we knew. It was actually the party that bought Pivik Pro is Cookie Information, that is owned by Kirk Capital, so with the financing of Kirk Capital. And the Cookie Information was actually our client at ClearCode back in the days. So we knew them, we had the relations with them for many, many years. We never thought that they would be a buyer, because we didn't think that they have the capacity to do that. But with the support of the private equity that is in their capital, they said it's perfect synergy. It's also privacy products. We want to make the offer. They actually make an offer because they learned that our transaction failed. And we mentioned that to them, not because we were looking to find the buyer, but because we're acquainted with them. So after many years of business relations, so we actually sold the company to the party that we never reached out to even with the offer. And it shows that sometimes the offer may come from an unexpected side in the deal.
So what was it like when finally the deal is inked? What was that like for you?
I was exhausted, because we were almost 2 years of the transaction, because of this first offer that came from the market, then you regroup, you start the process, and then it drags for months, because it was really bad timing when it comes that nobody wanted to do transactions at the end of 2022. So I was quite exhausted, but at the same time, I was a bit relieved that I can now focus on the things that I have planned for myself. So after I sold ClearCode a couple of years earlier, I started angel investing and working with early stage entrepreneurs, helping them a bit of using my experience as an entrepreneur in their way of growing the business. And I really enjoyed it, and I wanted to do it, let's say, full time. And so my plan was to start a venture capital fund that I'm working right now on. And the moment I closed the transaction, I had basically 2 months of getting a bit of rest, etc. And actually, I started the fundraising for the VC fund early 2024. With two partners, and I felt alive again, because it's building something from scratch again. And I felt that it's my history with ClearCode, Pivik Pro, that's and also the advertising network, which was I had no other break in between. That was 15 years. And now I'm doing something completely from scratch that I've chosen to do. And yeah, it's great.
So then it sounds like now you're going to the other side of the table, maybe more on the investment side. I mean, what does the future hold for you?
We'll see what the future has for me. But I think given that in Poland, we don't have many VC funds run by entrepreneurs, I think we have a very interesting value proposition to the startups. That's the one thing. And the second, I learned a lot on my transactions. And I know like how certain things are uncomfortable for entrepreneurs and how things could be better and still beneficial for the both sides. So I hope to introduce some new quality for this early stage investments, as well as I think we will have quite a lot of success of attracting the founders to the fund that is run by serial entrepreneur.
So let's say I put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time. I bring you back to the time that you were, you know, let's say dropping out of school to start the advertising network. Let's say right on your way out from that class, you know, you're putting the backpack behind your back and saying, okay, it's time for me to say goodbye to this environment and to go at it on my own. And let's say you're right there, you know, in the entry of the classroom, you know, right when you're getting out for the last time out of the classroom, and you're able to stop that younger self and you're able to have a sit down and you can give that younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
I think the one big piece of advice that would make a lot of impact for me is that founders need to do sales of their product by themselves. I did the mistake in the first business that I wasn't like, I thought that as a technology founder, I can focus on the technology and I will hire somebody to do sales and marketing for me. And that was a huge mistake, of course. And I repeated it only to certain extent in some other occasions. But every time I got back to like almost full-time doing sales, our company was growing the fastest in the history, no matter what was the base from which we were starting. So I think founders-led sales is super important. And I would convince myself that you need to focus on that. And it's great that you know technology because you have a better grip of like what's happening and what you're offering, but that's not the most important in the business that you will be running.
So for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Find me on LinkedIn. I think that's the best way to connect. Also, you can just type in my surname, zawadziński.com, where there's links and contact information and some info on my angel investment.
That's amazing. Well, Maciej, I have to say thank you so much for taking the time, you know, to be with us today. It has been an absolute honor to have you here on the Dealmaker Show. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.